Look at this. I got headphones on. I got a mic going. Baby.
If
Huh?
only people could see you now.
Hey, no video. We've gone through this before. No video.
Welcome to This Commerce Life. This is a podcast aimed at small, medium entrepreneurs focused on commerce. I'm Phil, your host, and Kenny, your co-host, will join us as well. And we're going to talk to you about the world of retail and commerce and how things are changing in the world.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm awake.
Excellent. Nick, how are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Great. I'm pumped.
Sorry. Excellent.
Sorry about the night, guys. It's my bad.
No, don't worry about it.
You know what?
It's all good. We blamed it on Jake, actually.
Yeah, your friend did it. You did it. Yeah. It's a consistent theme.
Yeah. No, but we blamed it on Jake, just so you know.
And we did blame it on Jake.
It's got to be the Jake guy. He probably distracted Nick. That's what happened.
Screwed it all up. So he set the bar low. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
It's all good, man.
I was in bed. I'm like, I saw a thing. It's like 9 o'clock. I'm like, yo, I'm asleep by 9 o'clock.
It's not a big deal.
No, it's all good.
Not a big deal. Not a big deal.
I'm ready to bring the fire today, though. So
I love it.
It's awesome, man.
We love it. Yeah. What's going on with you? It's end of August, beginning of September. You guys have been on the move. Like, what's happening in your world?
Yeah, just raising just a really big financing round now to take the company from 10 to 100 million. That's the goal to.
Wow.
I think start bringing in the management team that, like right now we have 8 roles, super executive roles out. And one of the main criteria is like, have you scaled from 10 to 100 at another CPG company? And if not, then that's just a non-conversation starter now. So getting that deal done, as you guys always know, in the summer is always the hardest process, but, planning's your best friend, you know? So we kind of had this cadence, and I would say in the next 40 days, I mean, I'm under term sheet right now, so it's in due diligence and yeah. And so
wow, that's a big deal.
Yeah, you're really stoked. That's good, man. You guys are really, really rocking and rolling, eh?
Yeah, we're really going for it. I think that's the most important.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people get caught up on the, what we do from a brand perspective is the most important to show the story. But at the end of the day, our ambition has always been to build something that has serious, serious magnitude. And the only way to do that is to continue to go for it. And every time we go for it, we put our Conans on the line and we put the chips all in and that's it. You know, I think that's the difference between the CPG companies that scale and don't is the founders that are necessarily not scared is probably the wrong word, but apprehensive about putting like, you know, going for it and going
it's
for
ballsy,
it.
It's ballsy, buddy. I mean, it's you know, you know what it's like. You gotta put your nuts on the line and you gotta push. Like, you gotta go.
Yeah. Our next year's payroll is $6 million, you know?
That's a lot of money, eh?
A lot of fucking money. And it's, but
that's a lot of money.
But if we get it right, it's huge, right? Because we're bringing on serious players from different CPG companies.
That's awesome. If you are on the hunt, you guys have got, I'm assuming, some people lined up, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, we just closed a huge, our VP of sales, probably, I would say, one of the number one candidates in the space that was being chased by a lot of companies in the U.S. His name's Mike Scavuzzo. He was very integral to the team at RX Bar, all the way from pretty much 15 million to 80 million. And then most recently, Clio Bar in the US. The reason why we love the synergy there is he was dealing with a refrigerated bar. We actually met because we were trying to do deals with that company, and then the synergy was there. So we locked that in. And now we're going after a big vice president of operations for the company. So we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. But that's what I've been up to. I've just been grinding my face away getting that done.
It's actually like, so I actually that like, so there's no, I think all of it's hard. I think finding people that have scaled CPG is harder, right? Like there are lots of CPG,
I would think so.
Right? There are lots of CPG people in the world and a lot of like like a VP of sales, you know, I have a lot of friends that they're in that space, and no disrespect to any of them, but most of them are in, you know, maintain to organic, you know, or like scrappy mode, right? So you're into 3%, 4%, 5% growth, right? Like that's what these companies kind of do. So to find guys that have taken this thing and like gone nuts with it is
very difficult. I think
it's hard to find, right?
Like, well, they're not easy to find. 99% are probably between that 2 and 10 million, and that's where they park.
Yeah. Well, it's either 2 and 10, or you came into a company that is, you know, kind of like 50 million or above, and then you're managing key accounts, right? So you're kind of like, well, I don't know how to get a conversation started with Walmart. I'm already there, right? So I'm just, you know, like,
here's the unique thing about Midday Squares, and I say it with like extreme humility, is we don't have a problem getting into the stores because of the way we communicate. The stores, we have pretty much relationships with all of them. It's about the management execution.
Yeah. Right.
That's what I think a lot of getting people defined on a hunt, like going after 100% year over year growth, like you said, Phil, not a lot of people can handle that stress. No. But because
almost none.
No, you laugh at it, but it's true.
If I run key accounts and let's say I'm $100 million business and I grow 5 to 10% a year, I get a decent bonus. Why in my right mind would I go
do 25, 30,
like
40
to go after doubling my growth year over year? Like it'd be an ulcer burning through my stomach, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a very small breed of people that would be crazy enough to do that, right?
Yeah, but that's why we raise the money. And the key to our executive team is basically the financial incentives are huge to join our team, right? So you're going to get rewarded. Comes with just our starting salary for our VP of ops is $250,000 a year plus 50% bonus. Then in that 50% bonus, a ton of share options in the company. So, I mean, the only way to attract people into the chaos is to make sure that they have significant financial outcomes.
Yeah.
For doing so, that's capitalism.
That's what, in essence, I guess that's what it's about, right?
Awesome.
I think it's amazing too. I think it's incredible. I really do. I think
so. For listeners, we always do this. We jump in, but we have got Nick from Midday Squares on. So if you're one of these candidates and you just heard what $250,000, what with a what.
You better be high energy. You better be ready to work.
Midday Squares. You know, Nick is looking. He wants to know. We'll put his contacts in the podcast details below. But go to Midday Squares and find him. But yeah, we've got Nick on, which is amazing. Amazing.
And I appreciate you guys having me on. But
yeah,
part of being so vocal with the company is also a recruiting tool as well too. It helps to
for sure. That. No, but that's 100%. For sure, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just you're in a funny space though, and I think you're probably realizing it as well. Is like we go back to it. There's not a lot of people, like really true. There's not a lot of brands, a standalone brands that aren't owned by a Kraft or whomever that are sitting, you know, in the numbers that you sort of are looking for in terms of what they did, where they came from. There's not. Yeah. I know people think they go to the store. They go to the store. There's 8 companies that own that.
Yeah, you know,
most of it's Nestle, Unilever, Procter.
Yep.
You know, there's not a lot of companies in the store. There's very few companies in that store. And then to have you guys be able to niche us, like you're already in a niche spot. And then to be a small brand and poke.
I think one of the things that has always been to our advantage is how small people think the opportunity is potentially when you look at it. Midday Squares from the outside looks like a niche product, but it's really not. It sits at the, just to give you an idea of why I think investors are so excited about it, why we're so excited about it, why we've always been so excited about it. The snacking market alone is $22 billion in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add on chocolate, globally is $142 billion. And we're at the epicenter of those two areas. I mean, we're going for it. We're a chocolate company. I think like Reed Hastings from Netflix always did a good job about it, is people like to put us in the category of like a protein bar or that stuff. And I don't mind it because it's very similar to Netflix prior to 2013. And nobody thought Netflix was going to be a competitor to HBO or any of these or Disney. And then one day to the next, it's like, oh, wow, they're not a streaming facility only. They're actually a media house. They're actually producing content now.
Well, they do shit, right? They're not just taking stuff and throwing it online. They're making stuff to throw online.
Correct.
And cool stuff. And stuff we hadn't done. You know, like we had miniseries, but not miniseries on miniseries.
Oh, come on. They've changed the face of how
you do. We didn't have movies every 15 minutes.
Look at everybody's doing TV different now, right? Like everybody's doing episodic different, right? Like, you know, it's.
And to your guys' point, I mean, I remember when I first met Jake, there wasn't anything in the space you were going into. Like you were going into a very complicated set. Refrigeration in traditional grocery was owned by a certain group of buyers.
Still
it
is.
Wasn't yeah.
I can give you stories on the mafias we deal with.
You don't have to. Trust me. We've been in retail way too long.
Well,
really shitty.
And
set
you live in Montreal, so
on top of that, and we'll end it there because listen, we're not hard to find.
No. We don't.
But you know what I mean? Like it's a very complicated set because it is controlled. Literally, like you said, like by a mini cartel, you cannot get in. So when he first told me, I thought, Jesus Christ, guys, you guys are really, you know, like you're really trying to.
You're going after.
You're trying to find a spot that's interesting on a good day.
Yeah.
Right.
But here's the pitch I think I would give to you that I would give to the same investors is. I'm turning 33, and I've literally, guys, no joke, have been hammering entrepreneurship since 16 years old, like trying my face off on everything, you name it. And what I've realized is that the only way to go after massive outcomes is to completely go against the grain.
Absolutely.
You have to choose a market that has huge tailwinds. And this is, I was just speaking to other food entrepreneurs last week, and they asked me, you know, what's too niche or not niche? And I don't like being prescriptive I can only say what's happened to me in my life. And what I know is every time I've gone after niche markets that were small in market size, it's been inherently more difficult than to execute in super saturated, massive markets. Now, the thing with the saturated market is by default, it's usually saturated because people stop innovating. And they bring together just Me Too product after Me Too product. And so I think saturation kind of makes people not want to enter those spaces.
Yeah.
But the truth is, if you enter a saturated market with true innovation, wow, the tailwinds.
You'll crush it.
The tailwinds are big. Yeah. So refrigerator, I can't even tell you how many data. I was just speaking with the CDPQ, which is the largest pension fund in Quebec. And they've got tons of data on this. The perimeters of grocery stores are where all 90% of the revenue is being driven on the perimeter, you know?
Right.
And so we play in the perimeter. And one thing that's stuck in my mind for the last 5 months since I met her, I won't name her name, but she was with Mars Corporation for a long time. She said to me, Nick, if you guys, because everybody asked us, when are we going to go into shelf stable? It's like if we go there, we play on Hershey's battlefield. We play on Mars's. That's their expertise.
Right.
Yeah.
Their expertise is not short shelf. It is not refrigerated cold chain. Yeah. So we invite them now to play on our battlefield.
Or not. Just stay in. or just stay over there. It's cool.
Or if, like you said, if you really want to be viewed as a power bar. Or, you know, well, not power bars, the brand, but let's pretend that we'll call them generically power bars. If you want to do that, then you should go the other way. If you want to be viewed as a Reese's peanut butter cup, you should go the other way.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that? Not likely.
No, we want to be known as the pioneers of chocolate in the future of snacking, which is the refrigerated snacking.
You guys are in a cool spot. Yeah. I just remember meeting him at the coffee bar and thinking, one, because of the energy he had, and then we, you know, start following. Like, okay, you guys are going to kill it, right? Because you're going to have a drive. You're going to have a little bit of a tough time because the set you're going into is a pain in the ass. It's run by people that have been around way too long, right? Unless you had shit tons of money, you know, or we had to fit the set.
Yep.
Right. Buyers are lazy, inherently lazy. I mean, we both were buyers. We came from this world, right? To do something different, to try something different. to bust out a little bit. It's like you guys reinvented the planet. It's not, it's, but for refrigerated buyers, you reinvented the planet.
Yeah.
Right. You did. I mean, and it's so stupid. It's a nothing, but it's such a cool spot and such a cool play. Like such a cool play.
And I think if we're correct, we will be rewarded. And that's been the pitch to investors this whole time.
100%.
Yeah.
T-Squares is the largest asymmetric bet I think anybody can make at this point in time. We have the same downside as our peers, but I believe our upside's way bigger than our peers if we're right on our thesis.
Oh, I think you're totally that way. Your large competitors cannot do this, my friend. They're incapable. First off, they're typically incapable of thought. They're incapable of innovation. Innovation to most of these people means you add an extra bar to the package. You change a flavor. I mean, that's not it. But again,
they're not gold that way, right? Like that's the thing. It's the same thing that keeps these guys from being candidates for working for you, right? Is if you work for that company, your goal to
maintain shelf space,
hold your market share, maintain your
steady growth, don't lose anything. Yeah, yeah. It's not about winning. Yeah, it's not about gaining.
Steady,
it's
right?
Don't
slow
lose.
And steady. Yeah.
You know, let's maintain. Yeah. It's mentality. Is when you watch you guys aren't talking about maintaining or like you guys want to explode. That's not CPG in general.
I don't know how else to say this. We want to be number one. That's it.
That's awesome, man.
It's always been that. I don't want to sell to another company. I want to die knowing that we built, you know, Nike. Like that's how I want to go out on this planet. Like I don't know how else to say it.
It's awesome.
You know? Yeah, don't talk about dying yet. You got lots of time.
No, but you know, you got-
yeah. If you start going, we're both in big trouble. Like we're way ahead of you. So easy there, cowboy.
No, but I totally get you. I understand.
Where it comes from, yeah. And I think this is like a super intimate conversation that allows your listener or anybody getting to know who I am for the first time is. My dad died on me mid-conversation when I was 10 years old. He had a massive heart attack while we were driving. But that's not the point is not to get the point is to say is I've always lived my life since that moment. Yes, I plan on living to 100%, but there was this realness of that I can never unlearn of where when somebody dies on you mid-conversation, the way we're speaking right now, you get this thing of where you can never unlearn it. And so I've always felt not in a rush, but I always just like, okay, I got to push the limits here. And, and I have just always been full pedal to the metal since that's happened.
Clearly, I think you've appreciated the time is precious because time is something you just don't control.
Yeah.
Right. As you found, unfortunately, I'm sorry about that, but your dad in front, that's a clear showing that basically, buddy, you don't know how long you're going to be here.
Yep.
No. You don't know when it's going to end. You don't know how long the ride's going to be. You don't know where the ride's going to take you. So you may as well enjoy it while you're on it.
Exactly. And I think there's that commentary has been abused too much in public of where people have cheesed it out, where it's real, man. I've seen it. My dad went out like the light switch is. Like
right.
Literally, you know, on, off, that was that button. Went
but
off.
You almost have to, it's not... It made you who you are.
Yes.
I've never had that experience. So I can do what everybody does. Oh my God. Yeah. He passed away. Shit. You know, that shows you, man, life's precious. We got to change the way we do things. Fucking 15 minutes later, you know what? You're doing the same thing you did 25 minutes ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's human nature.
Yeah.
We say the right things and we do exactly the normal things we always do.
Yeah.
Right. To take it and go with it is different. You had a very, very unfortunate experience. I can't even imagine what it must have been like, and yet you spin it the way you spin it. You've made it into a whole different thing. I mean, you can't do anything about it. It's made you who you are, though.
Anything about it other than fucking? It's where I get my drive from.
Well, I was gonna say it probably it fuels the internal furnace to do whatever. No, you could have gone the other way as well.
Yeah,
you could have clammed up and you could have shelled in. I mean, it's really up to you how you manage what you manage, right?
Exactly. And also it's caused me. And that's like the number one piece of advice I try to give is like, give less than zero fucks about anything that people think about you. And the second you start to live for yourself, you unlock magic, man. And that's what that 20 years, I always tell people like Midday Squares is a project that came because of just a bunch of left and right turns that I need to make in my life that got me to where this moment where I was like, okay, I've made enough mistakes now to know exactly what I'm interested in. And then I found two incredible partners that were able to sync up with me and each bring a completely different superpower.
I was going to ask you about that. So how did you meet the fam that one turned into your fam? Yeah. Well, they're both your fam, but I guess, you know, one really is fam.
Yeah. One really is fam. No, really interesting story of how we all met. I actually met Jake when he was 10 years old. He was a goalie. And he was this kid that showed up at hockey practice. I was an older goalie. So we would stay on to help the young kids. And Jake was like just the most useless human of life at that point in time.
You know, that's some reason I can actually see that. That's the funny part. I'm thinking I can't see him being really much use as a.
Yeah. No,
Jake, sit still in a box that's 4x6. Don't move.
He was so. Jake has a lot of. I mean, he's been open about it. I don't think people know how bad dyspraxia is for you in your early years, and he's got fine motor skill problems, and so. One of the main things is I think he was so turned off by sports because of how much he was affected. And so he didn't want to be there at that age. I think kids, you know, when they realize they're not excelling like their peers, they kind of either shy away. And I think his mom was bringing him. But we can get back to how he found his stride in his 20s. But so I met him early. I got to know my mother-in-law. At this point, we had no idea what life would take to us. Then I was dating a girl who was friends with Les, and Les was dating my friend. And so we thought it would be cool when we were that age, we all would hang together. And that's when I met Les. And what always attracted to me to her, and I never in my life would have thought that I would marry this girl at that point. It was just like, she was a big dreamer in a way that really aroused me from a mental state that I hadn't had anybody in my life that was dreaming like I was dreaming. And so we instantly connected there. And then from basically 15 to 23, we didn't hang a lot, but we were very close. We would always talk ideas together. We actually have a signed contract in 2013 that we made a promise to each other that we would build something massive together. And I still have that contract signed. I have a picture.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And we just kept on going and going. And so what ended up happening, she was in New York City she was doing some gnarly fashion design manufacturing in New York. And she needed money. And I had a little bit of success from a software startup I was part of. So I staked her. And I staked her. She must have been 19 or 20 when I staked her. And we would spend a lot of time talking about that growth. And I saw it. I mean, she was getting really into the scene. You know, she designed for Lady Gaga. She designed a very important piece for Lady Gaga. And I saw where we were getting with that. But she was burnt out from fashion. I would say it took 3-4 years for her to fully burn out. And by the time she came back to Montreal, we hadn't had success with that. But what we both knew was that we can work really, really well together. So I basically said, why don't we create kind of like a studio of where we just figure out at this point, I was on a non-compete contract. I'd exited from the company. I couldn't work in my field for 3 years. And we were just playing. And we ended up getting a condo together that was like this big rectangle. She had her zone. I had my zone. And the middle was our creative space, literally creative space of where we would just spitball ideas. And at this point, we still weren't even dating or married.
You're not romantically involved at this point. Like
at all. Zero. To the point where I even had to go speak to my father-in-law until this day. And I kept my word. I said, I'm not asking your daughter to move in with me because I want to be romantically involved. I really believe this is what we need to figure out what we're going to do with our lives and be at it in a very creative space. I'm a big believer of creating creative environment to get juices going. And yeah, and you know, the way it all worked out is that the feelings definitely broke, and I knew I never wanted to date her because I didn't want to fuck up the one good thing I had in my life, which was that relationship. I felt it was the purest relationship I've ever had in my life. So I didn't want to date, actually, because I didn't want to even expose the opportunity right. for that to go wrong. And then we both just looked at each other and we're like, this is what we want. This is how we want to live our life. And so let's do this. And we started dating, and 1 year into dating is when Midday Squares really broke. That's really when we started working on the idea, and we got married essentially the same year Midday Squares was founded.
Wow. I want to give you a hug. That's nice.
Me too.
That's nice.
That's awesome.
That's a nice story.
It is. And I've been through my fair share of relationships. You know, I went through really, you know, I never thought I would get married. I have strong opinions on what the foundation of relationships and marriage look like, but she had the same. So at least we knew our foundational truths were the same. So yeah, it is nice.
But I think it is nice because, you know, that carries into the other things. Mm-hmm. Like, business is a relationship. How you run your business is a relationship. You know, to me, I'm probably a little old fashioned to that. Like, when you got solid ideas on how things run in your personal world, that transcends in how you do your other things. Like, I tell you the truth, like, honestly, I really enjoy, I mean, okay, I've told Jake this. I said, there's days where it's a little much. I can only take so much. But I love watching you guys. I love watching the story. I love watching the interactions of the three of you. Like, I really do. Like, deep down, fuck the business. I don't give a shit if you guys fail. I don't care if you – I want you guys to succeed, and I know you will.
I know.
I couldn't give two rat's asses if you fail. I fucking love how you guys do, why you do. To me, when I watch it, I feel you're honest. That's who I talk to. The rest of it is great, and it makes for a cool podcast in terms of the business side, but – I really like watching the three of you. I really do. I really enjoy the interaction. I really feel when I'm watching, I like these people.
Thank you.
You know, I like them. I want these people to do well. And I love this product because I love these people.
Yeah.
Like, I love Jake. And even his brother. I know his brother, right?
And you haven't even met my wife yet, right?
No, I haven't. Yeah. But I do. We hadn't met you till today. And now I even love you even more than I loved you before. And I didn't know you before. Because it is nice. I just love those. Yeah. I love that.
I think when we asked what the foundation of Midday Squares should be, it's funny because that's another thing that I think people don't realize about us is how methodical and thought out everything is. I think a lot of CPG founders think they need to be something when getting into the space. Because of the way consumers are behaving, that like, we're a vegan product, but I don't know if you see, like, we'll be on our Instagram and we'll be eating a steak. I think you don't need to be anything that you're not. And so one thing that was really important when we started was, whatever the hell this brand needs to be, it needs to be very, very authentic to who we are. And I hope that in turn, we will prove to a whole new generation of entrepreneurs entering the space that being generally just a good fucking human could get you very far, very, very far. And I think that's forgotten in a lot of industries.
It is forgotten.
100%.
It is forgotten. Yeah. I'll tell you, like, it's funny. I was having a conversation with my wife the other day. We were in the car and it came to management styles. And, you know, it was sort of that old school, like, you know, the big guy with the stick and you're yelling at people and this and that. And I said, who the fuck wants to work with an asshole?
Yeah,
but like, seriously,
management. We speak about this a lot.
Who wants to work for that? I'd rather be mediocre and work with nice people than work with people that that's great. They have all the success. But to me, that's, again, I think why I really like watching you guys, because I really do feel like you're just first solid people. Then I can love your product too.
Yeah.
Because I just... like you guys, I think that is important today. And I'm way older than you, buddy. Like, my generation doesn't typically go down that path. That's your guys' generation.
I would agree with that. But I think the beauty about generation is that if we are doing right by evolution, every generation should get a bit better.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
I agree.
I'm on a family retreat right now where it's my mom's here, my brother, my sister, all my nieces, nephews. We spent the weekend together.
Nice.
And we were just talking about, like, yeah, it makes sense that we're seeing differently. We're seeing life differently than my mom saw life, and our kids are going to see it differently.
Exactly.
We're exposed to new information. We're exposed to new ideas. That's the beauty about being
human. That's what it should be about. Ask your mom, because I tell you, like I was a very different person when I was in my 20s, right? Obviously. As you grow old, your kids will change you. My kids have mellowed me. I've had paradigm shifts in how I view life or things. Why? Because the kids do it. And you look at their age group and they think differently. You guys, when I talk to Jake, it's the same thing. It's a very different, it's like talking to my kids, right? Yeah. It's the cool shit that we get to learn from what you guys are doing. And then you're going to pass this on and your kids are going to scare the shit out of you because they're going to teach you a ton of things.
Yeah.
And change the way you look at the world.
Oh yeah. I think the most we could do is Mark Anderson from Anderson Horowitz, the investment firm. I love following his blog, always says strong opinions loosely held. I love that. Right.
Yeah.
Be convicted. Right. Be open.
Be open. Be open to change it. If you're proven wrong, I hate saying wrong. If you could be brought to a different light, embrace the light. It's good to learn things. It's good to be wrong. It's good to have a change of plans or attitude. It doesn't kill you.
And that's why we got to change the culture of shunning people for changing opinions.
Yeah. Well, we've done that now. We call it canceling people.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how we got to that point, but that's, I'll blame your generation for that. Cause I don't know what the hell. What happened to that?
I will take responsibility for our generation and something, but just know you have people like myself out there for our generation trying to see the other light, which is we got to stop shunning people for changing opinions. Just because you had an opinion 5 years ago does not mean that should be you. You should be held accountable.
Yep.
At 100% to that opinion, because that is saying that in life we cannot
change. You can't change.
That's not
so true. Life should stay the same. So what I thought when I was 2, I should hold at 55.
Correct.
Well, that's a great growth. Wow.
I am so fucking with
that. As I told you, that's why we love you guys.
Yeah, we really do. We really do. I have some questions because I wonder.
I'm an open book.
I just wonder because you guys, and we asked Jake about this too, but I think it's a different slices. You're like, you guys put out a ton of content all the time.
God.
And I think it's like, you know, for a guy like Jake, who like his role is to be, out there. Right. And to be kind of that ambassador as well as the sales guy, it makes sense for you. It's a really untraditional role in a lot of ways, right? Like for you, like, I wonder how crazy your summer's been that you have been fundraising. You've got term sheets going, you guys shoot a ton of media. Do you know what I mean? Like you're talking to associations, you're out there with people, you're like, how do you balance all that? It's gotta be a lot to manage.
I don't think you do balance. I think that what we speak about at our therapist, who we've spoken about a lot on our shows, Dr. Jim Gavin, is we work to homogenize versus compartmentalize our lives. So the entire thing is Midday Squares.
Yeah.
And so that's where all the work goes into. And I follow Kobe and Jordan my whole life. If you want to be number one, you must play all the time, the time. It is. And everybody does not need to follow that path.
No,
you don't. But for us, like I said, if we're going to go out and really build a conglomerate sized company with new ideas and new foundations and do it in 10 years, it's all the time. It's all the time. And it's been at the sacrifice of a lot, but that's also part of why I made sure to be in business with my wife, because I knew I would be divorced by this point in time if I didn't have my wife with me. No, it's the truth.
Right.
No, it's 100%.
Trust me. I think we both get that. I mean,
So we're just on all the time together. And 99% of the time has been to make the process enjoyable of being on all together. And that's when you unlock, the piece that I think other people won't be able to compete with us on is is instead of our work cycle being 8 hours, it's 16 hours.
Right.
So we can just get so much more done than the next person.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the three of you are running at the same speed, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not convinced it's even 16. I think you guys are 24/7.
I would agree.
Yeah, I think you're full of shit on the 16, but that's okay.
Yeah. But the only reason why I say 16 is because I really prioritize sleeping. I always have. I don't know if you guys know, I was a competitive athlete making a run for the NHL as a goaltender. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, until 20. Sleep has always been a huge priority in my life. Always. Like, you know, after my dad died there, I got to give him a shout out. There was this man, Rory Olson, that took me into his life. He was a father figure for me, massive executive in Canada, in Montreal, and always pushed me to be great. And what he did was he spent money in developing me as a human that he never had to. He was at 14 years old, he was seeing a performance coach. He was a CEO of, he founded Paysafe, which is the third largest pay wallet in the world. Hmm. And so they were competing with PayPal, and he had an executive coach that was really helping him be great. And that coach introduced me to Howard Schwartz, who is a performance coach for MLB pitchers. And yeah. At 14, I was exposed to what it means to be mentally prepared to play. And part of that was a 360 approach, is that if I was balanced in mind, health, and athleticism, that I would be my best self when I played the game. And so sleep and all these things were really introduced to me early in my life. And I think that's carried over. Yeah, it probably is more than 16 hours, but guys, I really mean it when I say I'm dead asleep by 10. I'm out cold.
Awesome.
That's good though. I mean, again, for a person that you view that probably doesn't look like he has routines, you obviously do. Your sleep is definitively a routine, important. And that's important though. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think the balance part is, it's probably because it's overused, and it's probably, again, more of a generational thing where you talk about work-life balance, but it's really hard to define what that is, because I think that's a very personal thing, right? Oh, you guys as a family, your work-life balance is very different than what mine is as a family, and probably mm-hmm. very different with Phil's a family. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Whatever works for you is...
It's a fingerprint. Awesome. It's like you just... In whatever thing you're tackling, you have to just ask yourself, what do I need to do in order to be successful in this endeavor? And that's it. And every human comes to their own conclusions.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's so, you know, the comment about you and your wife being in the same business, I chuckled because, you know, earlier on in my life, when I hit kind of like senior management levels, like my wife was always a high performer as well, but we were just different stages. Right. And so there are moments where, you know, like when you're starting to get, you know, like at one point in my life, I think I was getting like 500-800 emails a day, you know, you got millions of people calling you, you know, and like, you're just like, you learn to manage the stress, you learn to balance everything out. Right. Just as we all do, but she wasn't there at the same time. Right. Yeah. And so there is kind of this push and pull, right. Cause she's like, no, but are you here? I'm like, I'm here. I'm mostly here, or I'm here and I'm balancing, but you know, and it's funny now because she's in a spot now where she's running a ginormous team, and she's saying to me, wow, like this is overwhelming, right? Like I got all these emails, and now I got like, and I got Slack, I got WhatsApp, I got people pinging me, I got family going, where are you? Are you answering? Like, are you checking out what's family, you know, what's happening on the family channels? And she's like, how the you manage all this crap? And I, like, you know, so it's funny, right? So that was my chuckling moment, because I feel like when you're doing it together, you're in the same spot. Do you know what I mean? Like, you actually, like, that part becomes a conversation more like
when we get home at 7, you know, and we both literally have nothing left to say.
Yeah,
we're both not
it's
not one trying to say something.
Like,
she's silent, I'm silent. And we both know why we're both.
Right. Which is, it's something all, you know, couples go through, right? Because there are those moments. I had to learn to be able to say to my wife, like, you know what? I just,
could I just have 10 minutes? Like, I just need to, like, my brain's not here yet. It'll catch up in a second. Just give me 10 minutes. I know you want to talk about stuff. Promise you will do that. Right. And now it's the flip side, right? Is I'm home. Like, my job doesn't take me anywhere. Right. So it's me and the dog. Right. So if the,
you're looking so for the wife's going, to talk
you know,
to.
Like she's coming home, like, hey, and she's like, whoa, just,
I need a second.
I just need a second. Like, you know, go away. I'll come find you. I promise, you know? So yeah. So that was the chuckle, right? Cause I totally get you. So
I dealt with it. Yeah. I almost married a girl before Les. I won't name her name. I won't even name her, but I almost married a girl before that. And the main kicker of why that relationship fell apart was that our foundational goals in life were just not the same.
Right.
That's hard.
So it always, I got to a point where I felt like I was being shunned for my ambition. And so I just knew I was either going to be alone for the rest of my life, or I was going to find someone right. that was going to be on the same wave of ambition.
It's very difficult though. Like it's hard for, you know, you're driven in a very different way. Yeah. Like well, we're all unique, but you're a very unique person. Like you have a very different way to match that. You either have to find someone almost polar opposite. So you complement each other very well. Yeah. Or you find someone very similar so that you guys can understand each other very well.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's a tough one. There's not a lot when you're getting close to the extremes. Like I find you guys extreme enough. Don't take that as not negative. I find you guys super on all the time. That's a very difficult state for most people to be in or be around. Yep. I like it. I think Phil likes it.
Yeah.
That's fine. But not everybody does. Mm-hmm. And to find someone who can go for that ride that's pretty cool. Like seriously.
It is.
I think it is anyway. I think it's wow.
Yeah, I can't even believe we found each other. Really, all three of us, because
pretty incredible.
Yeah, I think it's. I don't. It's this sounds like the most egotistical thing, but I don't mean it from this way. I think it's a once in a lifetime opportunity for all three of us.
100%.
Yeah, you're probably right.
100%.
You're probably right.
Yeah,
you'll never really know. I mean, you might have 12 more of these opportunities. I don't. I'm convinced you guys are going to be crushing it for a long time, dying to see what you guys end up doing.
It will be us. I don't think, I think the timing, the fact that all of us were ready for the journey, it was really weird, the timing.
Cool.
Jake wasn't there for the first 9 months and he just became available like 30 days before launch. And it all just worked out.
Right.
It was never the plan to be the trifecta. It just worked out.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Okay. So you are hiring like crazy senior management. So if you're CPG and you want, well, if you want to grow like crazy, but you got to be ready to grow like crazy. No free rides here. These guys are on the ball.
All the time, man. Be ready to light it up.
Midday squares. Love it.
Ready to be on camera.
So what's next? So you got like, so you're under term sheet at being reviewed. So you have big news coming, like
potentially that's soon. A huge news
within the next 60 days. Yeah. And it's really big. We locked in a massive partner, that is here to build the next Hershey size business with us. So, what was really hard was aligning investors at this scale of the game when you're $20 million size. That we didn't want to sell the company to a conglomerate. So it actually limited, like I spoke with the Cavus of the world. I spoke with VMG, all the main big CPG funds.
Yeah.
Right.
And we just couldn't find alignment on vision at all. So it took a really special partner that's going to be the big announcement when we make the announcement. What's next for Midday Squares is how fast could we get to $100 million of revenue? We actually know exactly how it looks at scale. And now it's about how fast we can execute on the plan.
Wow.
And that's just going to take the goal is from here in 24 months. So we've given ourselves 2 quarters to install the management team. So that's about 6 months to get all the hiring done. And that's what 99% of my time is every day. And then the second that team's installed, there's basically an 18-month blitz to get it to about the $35 million of revenue range. Because then we have to start building out facility number 2,
right,
which is it's crazy with the lead times on machines right now. We have to have an answer on what phase two of our facility looks like by end of 2022 for a 2024 install.
Yeah. Right.
So it's stressful because you're making just a lot of, we have to have a 90% batting average. I'm not going to lie.
You're betting way out and you better really know what you're betting on.
Yeah. We got to bat 90%. And that's why I laugh when people say all the time, like, oh, midday squat. I don't know if you guys ever saw my LinkedIn post where I said, I don't know some days if we're crushing or crashing, because the delta of those look so similar.
So similar.
Viewpoint.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
If we just get a little bit wrong, we'll smash a wall. But like Formula One, the only way to win the races are to take the edges in the corner, right? Like
exactly. And they just they rebuild cars, eh?
Yeah. They rebuild them.
So it's not, you know, you can hit walls and still come back next week and race.
Yes, exactly. And that's the mindset, though, that you got to get into that I think is terrifying. Another thing that Midday Squares has that I think has been difficult for us and always makes our fundraising a little bit more difficult is we don't give up board control ever. And the reason why is it's so left field that I think we would get fired from our own company for sure. That being said, here's the thesis that I would love to leave with all of you is that value. So Kiva Dickinson, who's one of our investors from last round, leads up. Why am I blanking on his fucking fund's name? He's going to kill me for that. Selva Ventures.
Okay.
We're seeing valuations go all over the place in CPG right now. But I told him, I said, you got something coming for you guys, because Midday Squares will set a new precedent of what it means to push valuations, in the fact that if you look at tech, all of the companies that have scaled are still founder controller led. The question is, what happens in CPG when you see a Hershey's emerge and the founders are still the vision and management team, the way Zuckerberg has controlled Facebook to scale, the way Jack Dorsey at Twitter's controlled to scale? You know, to date, the typical playbook in CPG is to invest in companies. And right now they're underwriting deals of maximum $600 million outcomes. When I go look at like Saputo's market cap, which is $15 billion, and we're preparing ourselves to take the company public on the TSX at the end of next year, and we continue to push that chassis, all of a sudden the deals that are being underwritten start to have a new maximum threshold, because hopefully we're going to prove a model of what happens when founders continue to control a board and scale. To date, all we know is scaling in CPG means getting to $100 million and selling it to Mondelez, Hershey's, or
that is pretty much the plan for most people. That's the plan. Which really it's not conducive to anything really cool. If all you're looking to do is just, you could do that. It's your business. You could do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But I mean, if your whole game is just to get in and get out, that plays differently than wanting to get in and we don't know where it goes.
But we don't know where this goes. I don't know where this goes. What I can fucking tell you, though, is that if we get there, it's going to be crazy, because you're going to have our same minds that you guys love today. Yeah. Now, with a company that's producing $20 million of excess cash flow, do you know what our marketing campaigns are going to look like at that stage? Like people, we're doing what we're doing now with no fucking budget.
Yeah, shoestrings.
Yeah. Can
you imagine if you got actually cash in your hand to go mental?
Oh my God. Like I think it's going to make what, and that's not our playbook, but I think it's going to make what Red Bull has done look comical in certain areas because of how much fun we're going to have with it.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I do think, though, that at 100 million, like, I think part of the problem is when you hit 100 million, no matter whether you want to or not, you start to play into kind of that top eight that we kind of talk about, right? Like, up until 100, that's not to say that you can't play with them or that you don't. It's just at 100 is when you really start. Like you look at Dollar Shave Club or Harry's, those guys, like all of them hit 100 million and then they can't, they almost can't crack some of those ceilings, right?
Like I have a big rebuttal to that one.
Yeah, yeah,
all sold control to bigger companies prior.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think they were done before the sale. They were already sold in essence.
I think that's the thing is so it's almost like keeping yourself. I think your point about the founder-led founder, founder-controlled board is so important because we have no idea what happens after 100 million.
I'm trying
because
to think.
By
you know,
then
I'm
it's a done
to think
deal,
if
right? So you've already folded into the top eight, right? So it's like, you know.
At one point in time, there was a founder at Hershey's. At one point in time, there was a founder at Mars.
Yeah, yeah,
we haven't seen founder-led monster CPG for 80 years. What happens when you have a founder-led? And to your point, what will be dangerous about Midday Squares is that we understand manufacturing. So when people ask us, well, what's the innovation pipeline look like? We can't keep up with what we want to do. What we have to actually do is stay so focused.
Just control. Yeah. Stay on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so let me ask you something. So now without telling the trade secrets. So what is next? Is there something new coming in the next 6, 8, 12 months that you can share that you don't have to, right?
Obviously. No, we have two very strong flavors in this pipeline. You will not see anything different than Midday Squares as a product line up until, because the clarity of 100 million of revenue is so clear, the current product line will be the product line till 100 with two more flavors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When those two flavors get released, will probably not be in 2022 because we're taking 2022 to install the growth team to be able to actually handle. I think we've taken a lot of advice from both succeeded scaled founders and failed scaled founders. And one of the commonalities of speaking with both those groups is the inflection point is now for us, usually at that $10 million marker, where in order to accelerate through innovative SKUs, you have to have that foundation in place. So we were originally supposed to launch the new flavor this September. Right. And we scrapped it. We just pushed it 10 months out to get through this piece completely. So I would say what's next for Midday Squares is two flavors, two really, really strong flavors that I would say play on the same thesis as our peanut butter flavor, and then mass distribution in North America.
Awesome.
Yeah, you're a treat.
Awesome.
It's cool.
We look forward to the announcement. We can't wait. Can't wait to see what comes next. Can't wait to see where you go. I can't wait to taste the peanut butter. I've already ordered it. My son's allergic to peanuts, but now he's out of the house. So peanuts are
back in the house.
Yeah, peanuts are back in the house, right? So this way I keep him out of the house, and then I also get to eat peanuts. So I can't wait. It would be exciting.
Yeah, and then gaining an expertise. It's funny, in our last board call, I finished it and I just said, guys, we're getting pretty fucking good at manufacturing. Like and that's a really fun place to be.
Damn right, it's a fun place to be. Where's the fun happen?
You don't
want to
be on the other side of that.
The fun happens in the kitchens. The fun happens in the lines, right? That's where the cool shit happens. Yeah. Well, that's where your ideas get born. Once they're born, you're raising the kids, which is fun too, but it's a different fun.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of fun. And I think the thing that never gets old for me every single day is I always have this moment during the day. It's by myself. There's two windows into the manufacturing section of our business. And I just go and I watch it. And I'm so fascinated that raw materials enter the facility and finished products leave the facility. Like that is
cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the coolest.
Do you sample them? Do you kind of stand in the line, kind of like?
Every day QA comes around the office. Yeah. at one point, and yeah, there's samplings from like live off the line.
That's good though.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Again, that's what happens when you're in the business, in the building, you know, and you got to be careful with that. Cause I know you know this, but this, the day you decide to move downtown to the head office on the 75th floor, because you will lose that.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's unfortunate because a lot of companies do that. If you can try to stay true, which I don't worry about the three of you, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
That needs to be hard to not.
It's not keep the thing we true. Worry about.
Experiment here is you guys nailed it. Like Kevin and Phil, you guys nailed it. The experiment that everybody is betting on is what happens when we give this team the scale. What happens? Will they be able to remain the same? We believe we will. Will they be able to scale that culture? Will, like, what happens? And I don't even have the answer to that, but what I do know is that the integrity is there to make it stay all the way through.
We love it. Thank you for taking time.
You're gonna get a big hug the next when we finally meet you guys. Well, Jake, we've already met, but honestly, I really love the story. I love watching you guys, you know. And wish you guys all the best. Look, sincerely.
I'm telling you, it's the messages I get from our fans, our customers, our other food entrepreneurs is that they have now seen something that's changed their opinions of how they want to interact in this.
Inspirational
world.
Right? You guys are. You're inspiring. It's you're really fun to watch. Like, you really are. Whether you're amazing on the show or not, if I feel that, I wouldn't tell you that.
I know.
I don't get any points in life for saying it. So I do. I find it very inspiring. Very cool to watch.
Thanks, man. Yeah. So we're just getting started. We're just getting started.
Light it up, buddy boy.
Can't wait. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Oh, dude.
We hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah. We'll catch up with you hopefully in the new year. I'd like to see how this next round goes. And
now that I know you guys are interested, as soon as if we go off air, I'll tell you who I think it is. You guys, if we could stop recording, I'll
shut the recording down anytime.
One second.